Welcome back to the Wise Athletes Podcast. Today on episode number 66, I talk with Derek Hansen, a certified strength and conditioning specialist who has been using EMS or electronic muscle stimulation for 25 years as a part of his work with athletes of all ages, seeking to recover from injury and surgery as well as seeking additional performance advantage. I have owned and used an EMS device for years without really knowing what I was doing, and so I decided it was time to find out how it was done. Join me as Derek goes through the many ways EMS can be used by older athletes to deal with limited range of motion, injuries, surgeries, as well as simple recovery from exercise, as well as a substitute for exercise when traveling or otherwise unable to get it done the natural way. Derek is a real pro. All right, let's talk to Derek. Derek Hansen, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully, I can be of some use to your listeners and provide just some, you know, experiences on my end on what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I hope so. In fact, I expect so because I have listened to a couple of your talks about EMS, which I'm not actually sure what that stands for exactly, but electrical muscle stimulation, something to that effect. And I have been dabbling in this, in fact, recently, even from a surgery that I had earlier this year. And frankly, I have not really had great results. And admittedly, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And so I'm sorry we didn't get to talk earlier, but I'm glad we're getting together now and get some advice from an expert like yourself for me and for my audience here of older athletes. You are a certified strength and conditioning specialist. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what you do for a living, and then how did EMS kind of become one of the things that was a part of your practice? How did you get to be an expert in EMS? There aren't many, I would assume.
Yeah, admittedly, there's not a lot of great information out there. So it's a lot of my own personal time and practical experience that kind of, you know, makes me what I am today. And, most of my work is in performance. And so working with, professional teams, NFL teams, NBA, NHL, and also, you know, some soccer teams in Europe. And a lot of the time I'm brought in to address issues around speed of movement, running speed, general conditioning. A lot of time rehab in terms of soft tissue injuries, a lot of hamstring injuries I'm brought in. So that's the main thrust of my work. And then the electrical stimulation piece has been something I've also, you know, really pursued in terms of my own personal research since probably the mid 90s. Okay. So we're going on, and time seems to fly here, but we're going on over 25 years, and I've used that mostly, I would say, initially for performance. So I want to make people stronger, faster, and supplement their conventional work with electrical stimulation. And you know, I think all of us have had some exposure to electrical stimulation in a physical therapy realm. Yeah. And when I was young, I don't think it really made a difference. I don't know. There wasn't like I jumped off the table and like, hey, I'm cured. But, you know, when you start really taking deeper dives into the technology and understanding how it works and what it can do, then it becomes a useful tool if you, you know, understand the training process and the impact it can have on the muscles and nervous system. So I've spent, you know, again, 25 plus years working on performance and also on the rehab side to really maximize use of this technology. And I think I've told people I've probably owned 15 to 20 different devices, maybe more. I can't even, you know, don't ask my wife, but, you know, it's, I have a good understanding of what the capability of the technology is, what the limitations are. And so, whether it's, younger athletes, professional athletes, or, you know, I call them mature athletes, which are like masters athletes, yeah, and older athletes like myself, I do make use of that technology wherever I can, passively, actively, and I've had some significant results.
Well, that's great. And I want to hear more about that. I know, you know, when you hear people talk about EMS, usually what you hear is that, oh, you know, it's a bust. It doesn't work, you know, because you can't just put it on your abs and end up with six-pack abs, or, you know, put it on your biceps and you're going to end up looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I believe that that's true, that it doesn't work that like that. I've tried to do that, and it doesn't work like that. Another place where I was hoping that it would help me out was when my leg was immobilized for a knee surgery that I had, and I had to keep it in a brace, unmoving for 6 weeks. And I was I knew I was going to have terrible atrophy, and I thought, oh, if I could just do a little bit of stimulation on it, you know, maybe I wouldn't lose too much. And it was still a terrible loss of muscle mass. Now it has come mostly back pretty fast, and so maybe the stimulation kept it from being worse than it was. I don't know, but really, honestly, I had no idea what to do, because you know it came with this. It's a complex unit, which I think is a good one, but it came with this little pamphlet that, you know, like where to put the electrodes and, you know, and it was like, that was it, you know, turn it up until you scream, I guess. And so I'm sure that there are some good things to do. It'd be like giving me a scalpel. It's not just because I wouldn't know what to do with a scalpel doesn't mean that nobody knows what to do with a scalpel for good. So I'm guessing that you have some things to tell us, but I'll bet that, in fact, I know because I've heard you talk about it. I wonder if you could kind of give us an overview first about how you use EMS in your practice with your athletes, you know, maybe the range of things that you do, you know, the kinds of things where you think that it can be helpful and maybe where it isn't. And then we can kind of take some deeper dives into more specific areas that I think, at least based on my own personal experience, would be useful to understand in detail for the older athlete.
Yeah, I think with your own personal experience, and I don't know exactly what you did, but if you're in a situation where you're immobilized and you can't use that leg and you can't put weight on it, you have to right away figure that, you know, that deload is significant. You're going from walking, standing, any exercise you're doing to absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So in order for you to you know, kind of reverse that detraining effect, you have to do something profound, both on the intensity side and the volume side. So I think a lot of people will go like, well, I put it on for 20 minutes a day and it didn't do anything. Well, have you put it on 3 to 4 times? And I know some people do overnight sessions to compensate for the fact that gravity is not acting on that leg. So I think people look at it as like this quick fix when you have to look at it in terms of, you know, conventional training and loading and go, okay, I have to simulate in a way that reflects what actual, you know, training does. And I think that's where the problem lies, is that people think it's like, you know, put it on, darn, it didn't do anything, right? And you know, maybe Dr. Ho is to blame for all of this, but you have to look at it from a training point of view. So if I'm going to strengthen a muscle, and a lot of the time when I was first introduced to it, electrical stimulation was used as a top-up method. So you would go and say, work your quads or your glutes, squat.
Yeah.
And then after, you would use electrical stimulation to kind of top up, so that if you fatigued your muscle voluntarily, you know, there's almost like this central governor theory of, well, your brain won't let you train yourself to death, right? So they're always going to leave a little bit in the tank.
Sure.
So EMS could go in and involuntarily create recruitment and strengthening where your brain didn't allow you to do it voluntarily. Okay. So you're topping up and filling that, you know, the last bit up with EMS.
Okay.
So it's not a standalone in that regard. But if you are starting to use it as a standalone where you don't have voluntary training, then you have to do something significant. And like I said, it could be several hours of work.
Yeah.
Where you're doing it as part of your rehab to regain, you know, or to maintain hypertrophy and strength, but it's going to be significant, and it could be uncomfortable, and it could be, you know, several times a day where you have to do this on consecutive days, you know, every day of the week. Cause again, you're not putting weight on it. So your brain's going, wow, I don't need this limb, so let's divert resources elsewhere. But if you now have a stim on there, 4-8 pads, you know, on the quad, the hamstring, the calf, and you're doing some loading, then it's going to be significant and you'll see a profound effect. So I think that's the first thing, is there has to be a commitment to the technology. And I think a lot of people don't have that commitment. Like, I know I've used this for 25 years. It is a, it is a bit of an effort to put the pads on and then do the warm up and then fire it up while you're sitting there watching Netflix, but really it's not. So I think that's the big problem right now is people think it's going to be this magic pill, but it's just like regular training and you have to treat it as such. If you're going to fire the fibers maximally, it's going to hurt a bit. And you got to do it, you know, several times in a session. So I think
that makes sense.
That's the tough part for people. It's you can't look at it as this, you know, again, this magic sort of box that's going to restore your ability. You have to look at it as a training tool, like a barbell.
So it really is very similar to exercising. It's just that it's involuntary. It's external electrical stimulation causing the muscle to contract rather than your brain turning something on. I would say that the mistake that I made just listening to you was in thinking that I could just replace my workout with the stimulation, but I didn't replace the fact that I wasn't standing on it and walking on it and going up and down stairs with it and all of those other things. I didn't replace any of that. And so, yeah, my leg, I guess, shrunk down to the size it needed to do the 1 hour a day of exercise that I was putting on it.
Yeah, and there's other nuances, right? So it's like somebody taking a supplement. So let's say I'm going to take whatever, protein. Yeah. Okay, you're going to take it in and I'm going to replace the fact that I'm not eating chicken, I'm not eating this, I'm not eating beans, right? So now you're using this very singular substance to supplement what you'd normally have in your diet. But there's all these synergies that happen when you eat all these other things and it's not isolated. So I would say the same thing happens in electrical stimulation is like, okay, I'm going to pick a, you know, if you use your Compex and you say, I'm going to use a strength program. Well, that's a very fixed frequency that targets your muscles very specifically. So strength. But we do know that there's an array of frequencies within, you know, the muscle stimulator, which could be slow twitch oriented or fatigue resistant. Or there's intermediate, or there's high frequency. So in a muscle stimulation device, it might be 30 to 40 hertz or pulses per second, which is slow twitch endurance, or 20 to 40 hertz, which targets slow twitch, fatigue resistant muscle fibers, right? And then there's intermediate ones. And then there's high speed, max strength, which could be 70 to 100 hertz. So unless you're running through all those programs within your sort of exercise regime, your EMS exercise regime, you're not going to hit all the fiber equally in a way that creates hypertrophy in different areas. And, you know, because every muscle has a different composition, right? The quads are a little different than the hamstrings. The hamstrings are a little more fast twitch.
And they all have a mix of fiber types.
Yeah, yeah, right. So nothing is 100% fast twitch and 100% slow twitch, but there's proportions, right? So your back, which is postural, will have more slow twitch, because if you were all fast twitch in your back, you just fall over after 10 seconds and then stand up again. And so you have to take into consideration that your muscles have these different compositions of fibers, and then now you have to gear your rehab or your strengthening to with those different frequencies in your training. So you know just like you would walking, so I go for a walk, slow twitch. Oh, I squatted 500 pounds. Well, that's fast twitch. And you know, so I think that has to be taken into consideration, which again, people will think, wow, that's really complicated. I can't do that. Well, if you're laid up and you're doing rehab work, you got nothing else to do, right? If you have, you know, that so why true. Not?
Yeah. Well, when your knee is in a brace and you can't walk on it, then I was laying in a bed for many hours every day.
Yeah, and that's an opportunity, like, to slide that device on and let's do slow twitch on all the muscles. Okay. Yeah. And then redo it, do fast twitch later in the day. Right?
Right. Yeah, and that's what I So, if only we had spoken before, I would definitely have done that. But you know, I think I just ran the strength program, you know, and of course I had to move the electrodes, so, you know, having only one device kind of And one set of electrodes was, you know, I mean, if I wanted to make it easy on myself, I'd have more stuff. Well, that's good. Well, anyway, so let's move away from my personal experience on that, which is why we're talking. But, you know, I think that there's lots of your knowledge that we could get out here for the benefit of this audience here. And so let's kind of go back. And you use this in your practice with your athletes for lots of different reasons that I've heard you mention, just so that I'm clear about what I'm asking about. You know, I've heard you talk about how you use it to reduce pain so that people will be able to do the rehabilitation work that you want them to do, which maybe is like some sort of range of motion that is painful, or just the joint is painful, just maybe reducing the muscle tension as a part of rehabilitation. Then you've also mentioned activating muscles that have been maybe turned off. The brain has said, oh, something scary is happening there. We're just going to turn that off and we're not going to let that muscle move. And it's a way of then telling the brain, hey, look, stuff's moving here. It's okay. Anyway, maybe you also use it for like strength improvement and that sort of thing as well. But I wonder if you might run through the list of things that you use it for in your practice.
Yeah, a great example would be I hate to be focusing on you all the time, but let's talk about a knee rehabilitation. So a common one is ACL reconstruction. And I'll use this throughout that process, right? So somebody tears their ACL.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm in Canada. So when is that surgery going to be scheduled? And it could be a while, we have a great healthcare system, but sometimes it takes a while. You have to wait in line, and it's not elective per se, but it's not an emergency to get it, that surgery right away. Yeah. So, I might be using that EMS unit initially to one, reduce inflammation. So edema formation around the knee, and I put it on the quad and the calf, we do elevation and we put it on a pulsing program to flush things out naturally and reduce edema. So, that's one of the first things. The other thing would be, well, let's put it on the quad muscles and the hamstring muscles and the calf muscles, because they're probably deloading that leg, and let's maintain some strength in there. And the great thing is it's not going to cause damage to the knee joint itself. I mean, you're being very careful with your selection of intensity, and you want maybe a pulsing contraction. So there is some stimulation in each of these muscles to maintain, strength and circulation and all that. So you're probably doing some pulsing programs initially after the exercise, the injury, so that one, edema reduction plus some muscle stimulation. And then we've had a lot of cases where we've had to wait a bit for the swelling to go down and then before surgery can happen. So we might do some strengthening. Then that could be sitting, that could be lying down, that could be standing and doing some stimulation to supplement, again, the fact that we're not working out, we're not training. So we could do some strength training on the quad, the hamstring, like I said, all of the lower body muscles on that injured side.
Okay.
In anticipation of surgery, right? So you're trying to go into surgery as strong as possible so that there aren't any losses once, once they go into the knee and disrupt things, even with a scope, that's trauma. Whenever there's trauma, like you said, your brain goes, oh, something's wrong, let's shut everything down. So we're trying to offset that, the brain response of shutting things down, and we're trying to keep a lifeline going through all those muscles and give it this sense that, hey, everything's pretty good, even though they beat the hell out of your knee with that scope, we're going to go in. And it depends on what procedure you've had. So if they take part of your patellar tendon, that's trauma. If they take part of your hamstring to, tie in the new ACL, that's trauma. So you have to kind of address those issues depending on what type of surgery you've had. And then you have surgery, and then of course there's going to be a lot of inflammation, and hopefully things went well. We've had some situations where people have had infections, and so we've had to be very careful about that. But I would say the day of, or even after surgery, we've had the stim on people and just, again, creating circulation, creating some sort of stimulation to get them through that initial phase post-surgery, to the point where maybe a week or two after, we're doing some pretty solid strengthening at different joint positions. So whenever somebody's had surgery, you want to get them to full extension, full flexion as soon as possible. And we're doing strengthening in different joint positions as we're moving them through. And I'm addressing slow twitch and fast twitch fiber with different frequency programs. And we get them to a point where, okay, let's get you to standing. Okay, let's do some stuff where you're just standing and we do some contractions so that you're used to holding that joint position with gravity going down through the leg and supplementing. Because again, you know, things don't recruit as well if there's a little bit of fluid in the knee, and the VMO doesn't recruit as well. So we stimulate that muscle in particular and standing, and then we might get you doing squatting slowly, and we use the stim during the eccentric portion or the concentric portion, and it helps to almost support that movement. So if your brain's not clicking in right away to do a squat, then we can do it externally. And you've seen this with paralysis cases, spinal cord injuries, that they will take people through joint ranges of motion and still stimulate the muscles, even though the brain isn't stimulating because the spinal cord is broken.
Yeah.
That they'll try to preserve muscle mass and function in the event that maybe one, you know, the injury does heal to some degree, or they come in with whatever, stem cells or other devices. And there's been a lot of productive use of electrical stimulation for spinal cord injuries, stimulating over the actual injury site. So I like the fact that you can, again, you're kind of supplementing or replacing the brain's involvement during these post-surgical situations until the brain kind of picks it up and goes, okay, I'm taking over from now. And then you may not need to use the stim after that, but it is a bit of a bridge technique. And, you know, but we're using it for strengthening, edema reduction, recovery between sessions, like you said, pain mitigation. So we may even run, you know, through the knee joint, a TENS current, a high frequency TENS current to disrupt pain so that somebody can get back to squatting or stretching or PNF stretching to get to range, because that pain itself is an inhibitor, right?
Uh-huh.
We're using all of these different methods at different frequencies to get people back to recruiting and moving through range as much as possible. So, you know, over that, say it's like a 16 to 20 week period of rehab, I'm using it all the way through because I think it does provide value at different stages, and it does, you know, and you don't want people taking pain medication all the time. If I can do it with an electrical stimulation device, you don't have to ingest all that medication through your system and your kidneys and your liver and whatever. So why not do it externally with a TENS device? So,
and I'm always worried about the pain medication interfering with the healing process anyway. So I'm
reluctant. We don't know how it affects our brains. You know, we have all these early onset dementias. Well, what were you taking? You know, we don't know.
Exactly.
So there's definitely lots of benefits through that entire process.
Well, it was interesting to hear you describe how the EMS is used both on a standalone basis, so while you're maybe laying in a bed or sitting in a chair, but also while you are exercising. So it's sort of, maybe the word is
superimposed is the word.
There we go. On top of movement. And it's to, I suppose you said early on, maybe the thought was that it topped off some exercise, but in this case, it sounds more like it's just to help the brain get out of the way of, you know, limiting what you can do because it's afraid that you're, you know, you're injured or you're going to hurt yourself. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. I mean, again, if we go back, I think they call it functional electrical stimulation when we're looking at spinal cord injuries, but they're trying to create almost like an exoskeleton of, you know, obviously braces and all that, but also they're firing the muscles externally, you know, with an external nervous system, which is your EMS device. And then there's computers that sequence the walking movement or running movement or whatever they're doing. So you can externally fire those muscles with electrical stimulation. So that's really what we're trying to do. And in those rehab cases, it's kind of like your respirator or your whatever, some external device that's pumping your heart until you, you know, can do it yourself. And it's the same idea.
And how does the TENS work? Am I saying that right? TENS?
Yeah, transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation.
Okay, I'll just say TENS then. And and somehow it's a pain reliever. Is it somehow like overwhelming the nervous system, and so you're getting less transmission of pain signals? I mean, how does that help with pain?
Yeah, I think they call it like a pain gate theory, where it replaces the pathway that maybe pain would travel down. So it replaces it on the nerve level, on the nervous system level. And so it's kind of masking, but I mean, that's all you're doing with pharmaceuticals anyways, but it's masking it in a way that it does, it blocks the pain signal. But we have pain for a reason, right? It's like, oh, something's wrong down there. But we all know that from a neuroplasticity level, that pain can kind of regenerate itself even after healing has occurred. And so there's this, residual pain effect, and you're trying to break that cycle. And you break that cycle by restoring function, getting people, sometimes it's getting through a range of motion. And once you get that new range of motion, the pain dissipates because you have, free movement. But you will have to use something to get people through those painful endpoints in the range of motion or whatever it is, if somebody squats, you're like, I feel pain in my kneecap. Well, okay, that might be a physiological pathology that we got to move the kneecap and break up scar tissue, or it might be neurological and we just have to break that pathway. And when once we bust through it, now they can move freely without pain. So there's a lot of reasons to use the TENS or high frequency stimulation to allow us to break through some of those barriers.
Great. Well, and some of what you're describing, because of your use of it as a professional helping athletes through rehabilitation and maybe other reasons, a lot of this doesn't sound like something that I should just do on my own, or we're advising people that after surgery you should get one of these things and do this stuff. It seems like a lot of what we're describing, it really ought to be used with a professional who knows what they're doing. But it would seem like there are other things that could be done on our own that are very similar sounding, like pain reduction. That's a good thing in many ways in life. But one of them in particular is this business of this pulsing, this removing inflammation swelling, I think is what we were talking about. But, older athletes spend a lot of money and a lot of time on all kinds of mechanisms for recovering from exercise. And it would seem like this is similar. It sounds a lot like what some of those things are doing. Does that sound right?
Yeah. And again, I don't think the technology has changed much since the 1960s in terms of like the types of currents that are going through your body, right? But, the interfaces have changed and the way the technology is delivered has changed, and it's much more affordable and it's much more comfortable. It's not like you're hooking yourself up to a car battery and just going at it. The amount of electricity required to fire a muscle isn't that much. Like I said, you could use a 9-volt battery or whatever. So what it comes down to is your use of that tool. And the problem is that you could go to a physical therapist and they might have had one course in modalities as part of their degree, their master's degree, and they might have covered, 15 different devices, and one of those might have been an electrical stim device. So how much information do they have on how to use this properly, right? So I do consultations with physical therapists. Some of them have master's, some of them have PhD, and I'll start with very basic concepts and they're like, wow, I didn't know that. Right? So you don't know if the practitioner you go to has the level of expertise that maybe I have, right? 25 plus years of really diving into all the research.
Good to know.
And if you just rely on the research, that's not enough either, because the research can only look at so much, and they can't, turn it up really high in a research study. If people start screaming, then the ethical people come around and say, no, that's unethical. So, I think, we are in a do-it-yourself kind of, YouTube, like let's look up YouTube, and I'll, if something goes wrong with my plumbing or my furnace, I go to YouTube first. I'm not, phoning somebody and letting them charge me through the nose. Sure. And, that was an example with my car. I had some issues with my power steering, and I could have taken it in and they probably could have charged me $500, $600, $700, but I bought a $5 O-ring for the compressor, and I solved it myself because I went on YouTube. Okay. Now, with your health, you have to be a little more careful. But I would say there's a similar level of you know, research that you have to take, you know, you have to take it upon yourself to figure out what's going on and how you can resolve it. And so with there's a physiotherapy clinic I work in occasionally in Vancouver, and we actually have taught the patients how to use electrical stimulation. Like, so we said, what is the purpose of you coming in here and sitting on a table and putting on an electrical stimulation device for 20 minutes? That's not really good use of our time or your time. So we'll sell you a Compex unit, one of the less expensive Compex units, and we will teach you how to use it at home so that you have 24/7 care. And then when you come in to see us, we'll prioritize it for manual therapy or things that we can do that we have expertise in.
Nice.
And then you can do the stim at home for, again, edema control, pain management, strengthening, recovery, whatever. So now for $200, $250, whatever it was for that unit, they'll have that unit for 10 years. I mean, that's a pretty good investment. I have a Compex unit from 2003. That still works. So that's 20 years. I paid $1,000 back then, and now the same unit can get for a lot cheaper. So putting that technology into someone's hands, giving them some very basic advice, can advance their health and their wellness if done properly. And then if I have to, you know, do something with them, some manual stretching or whatever, then I can help them as well. But it just keeps bumping them along and improving their health and wellness. Because we've put some power in their hands.
Well, cool. I mean, have you used it in a context of like a recovery? I think I remember hearing about a hockey team, you know, after a game, they had to jump on a plane or a bus or something. And so they didn't really have a chance to cool down like everyone knows they should. And so they would use these electrical stims on a real low intensity, right? They're not trying to cause more muscle damage. They're just trying to get the muscles to move, to clear out all the, you know, the waste product, that sort of a thing. I mean, was that you? I mean, have you used it in that context?
Yeah, definitely. And there's a number of teams like, you know, in the NFL and the NHL and NBA where we have, you know, if their staff are really keen and they will buy 6, 7, 8 units, and they will use it in that capacity, especially in a playoff scenario where you have pretty significant turnarounds in terms of number of games in a week. So, okay, we're going on the plane. Okay, you guys put it on your calves. Even just like I took a flight to Tokyo. I took a stim unit, put it on my lower legs. I had it going the whole, very passively, the whole flight I had it. And when I step off the plane after a 9-hour flight, fantastic. I can walk. I don't have, you know, any stiffness or anything like that. I feel great.
Develop any blood clots?
Yeah, exactly. It's drawing fluid and you know, blood down into your legs, and you know, you're not able to move that much. So yeah, it's a perfect recovery tool for addressing all of those issues. And I remember I was trying to promote it for I think it was pilots or we were trying to get on board with, I think it was an airline or something like that to use these. And they said that they were want to be careful with the wording because flying and sitting on a plane is so bad for your health in terms of, like you said, the circulation issues and, I can't remember the deep vein thrombosis or whatever, that they didn't want to even mention that because it is an issue, right? They didn't want that in any of their literature or anything like that, even though they know it's a problem. So if you are traveling a lot and you're going on long haul flights, invest in an EMS unit. They're not that expensive. Like you said, the basic Compex Fit unit is maybe $149 or $199. So it's got a massage program on there. Stick it on your legs. You'll feel a lot better and it'll help your health.
Oh yeah. That makes tremendous sense. Let's see. One other thing that actually, that we haven't mentioned yet on while we've been recording that I want to make sure we talk about is you talked about at one point the use of this as a test to see if there is inhibition in one limb or another, like what level stimulus is required to get the muscle to fire on your left leg versus your right leg. And if there's a big difference, that means something. Talk about that.
Yeah. So I've done this with athletes all the time, but there wasn't one particular case where we had a middle-aged female come into the clinic, and she had just had a knee replacement. I think it was her left knee. And so that's a, you know, that's a really traumatic experience, sure. Significant, lots of swelling, lots of inflammation on a daily basis. And of course, the, you know, the default was, well, prescribe or something for the pain and, you know, and thin the blood and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So when we first put the stim on her quads, so the right quad was a healthy one and the left one was the replaced knee, the total knee replacement, it took about 20 milliamps to fire up the healthy quad. On the other side, it was probably about 75, 80 milliamps to get any sort of contraction out of the knee replacement side. Huh. So right there, you know that, you know, on a nervous system level, that one, the swelling and the inflammation is causing an inhibitory response. So even, so how can her brain fire that quad? Uh-huh. If that's happening. So when we start adding the stim, at least we can turn it up and get some sort of response out of the leg. And over time, over, you know, 12 weeks, we start narrowing that gap. So instead of a difference of 20 to 80, now we're down to 20 to 55 or 20 to 45 or, you know, and eventually we got it down to, I think, 32 on one and 20 on the healthy side, which you might say, well, that's still a deficit, but that's way better than what she had. And because, you know, it might take a couple of years to get that back. But I mean, you have to, again, attack this on a regular basis, 2, 3, 4 times a week of stimming that quad, standing, sitting, you know, squatting, whatever, and you will get it back. But, you know, again, it's like a PTSD of the knee. Mm-hmm. You have to be persistent and you know how much trauma went into that knee. And so it's going to take some time to get it back. But, you know, the stim will tell you what's going on. That there's a problem. And then if you start narrowing that gap, that corresponds with their health and their function. So if we get it back to 20 and 32, now she's doing full squats without pain. She's doing lunges, step ups, whatever. And maybe that extra, you know, 10 milliamps of difference is going to take another 6 to 12 months. Who knows? But we at least we've made a huge difference.
Well, that's great. And obviously a person like that would have expect, we all would know that there would be a difference from the knee that was replaced.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, she could do nothing with it for some amount of time. But I have encountered on multiple occasions over the years, lots of people who, when they had dual power meters on their bikes, they would find that their power was really different between their legs.
Yeah.
And that would be a signal that they had, but not everybody's got dual power meters, but I'll bet lots of people have power differences in their legs for whatever reason, inhibitions that maybe, you know, postural things, maybe a sore toe, who knows, that then became permanent as they would favor one leg over the other, but totally without knowing about it. But this sort of a stim test would give them some clue about that, it sounds like.
Yeah, and there's always going to be asymmetries in people, right? It's the simple fact that I'm right-handed mm-hmm. is going to create an asymmetry, right? And I also ran track. And if you run track, you run around the track in one direction. So the left mm-hmm. leg is going to load differently than the right leg. Okay. If you play soccer, you're going to kick with one leg more if you know, whatever, you name it, right? There's asymmetry in our life because, you know, even using a mouse with one hand is going to shift your body. So do we try to correct these things? I mean, to some degree, yes, you can do some supplementary strengthening, but what level of deficit or difference is significant? And I don't know if we know that. I mean, there was a friend of mine who worked with an NBA player who couldn't do a single leg step up with the left leg, but was still functioning as an NBA player because he compensated really well. So
pretty high functioning.
Yeah. So I mean, yes, we want to, as much as possible, create symmetry. Is it going to be perfect? No. So I think we have to be conscious about it, but not pathological about it. Like you can't get so much anxiety.
So if it's a small difference, then maybe.
Yeah, I think 20% is under 20% is acceptable based on the research I've seen.
Okay. So the other thing that we haven't mentioned yet here is, and maybe it's not really related, but it sure sounds similar. And this transcranial stimulation.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like there's a lot of do-it-yourself. If you do a search on TCDS, which is transcranial direct current stimulation, you'll see lots of interesting things. A lot of people shaving their heads or using sponges on their heads and all that. And I think, you know, there's a device that was sent to me by a company called Halo, which looks like headphones, and they have little stimulation, you know, spikes that come off the headband. It's interesting. I think there's probably something there. I think for things like depression and anxiety and all these sort of things, they found that deep stimulation. So, I mean, that's where they have to stick an electrode in through your skull and into your brain. They've had significant results with that. Yeah, but, you know, that's not something you go down to the corner store and get done.
Or do yourself.
Yeah, and I think they found that doing a transcranial, so you with electrodes on your head, you know, I think they've done some studies with cadavers and they found that they can't get through the skull. So,
good design,
but there is something with, you know, even feeling peripheral stimulation on your head, I think that it can have an effect. And then there's other things that they use, like, they can use it through your ear and in your neck to do vagus nerve stimulation, which does help with inflammation, inflammatory responses. So things like Crohn's disease and all that, they found that. Yeah, and a lot of those work best with some sort of implant. So it's an implant in your system to target the vagus nerve. So depression, like I said, inflammatory responses, they've had success. So there's something there. And just like I said, with the, I was watching a presentation from the University of Washington, and they were doing studies on different spinal cord injuries and doing placements beside the injury site on the spinal cord or over it or above it. And they were showing some significant improvements in like upper extremity movement. So they were doing things like placing things from one dish to another dish or something like that. And initially it was very, you know, shaky, or they could barely do it. And then after several sessions, they smoothed it out. So there's something to it. I'm not an expert in any of those things, but it does get me thinking about potential in how it relates to, again, just our regular injuries and all that. So electricity is very powerful and can have some applications. And I'm really interested in some of the research moving forward. I think they're getting a little more precise in how, what the mechanisms are. But, you know, definitely we are governed by electricity. Our brain sends signals. And can we improve that? Right. Very possible we can.
Well, I guess we're just early in this work, this engineering, and you know, except for people like yourself who are using it in some specific applications for rehabilitation, or even, and you haven't mentioned it that I recall, using it for enhancing physical development, so for performance improvement. So let's just dive into that for a second. Do you use it for that too? So somebody's perfectly healthy. They're just looking for that little extra edge of something. Does EMS come into play?
I think so. And if you're looking at an older population, which you and I make up, you know, I have a weight cage, and I have barbells, and I have in my room here. I don't enjoy doing that as much because it hurts. You know, I can feel it in the joints. And do I like squatting, you know, over 300 pounds to the floor? No, it sucks. Yeah. So now I'm looking for other ways to supplement, you know, hitting those muscles that don't put stress on those joints. Right. So, you know, I might have, you know, I still do some weightlifting, but I'm not pushing it as hard because there's a risk involved and it sucks. So I'm looking at ways to target those muscles in a manner that doesn't put the same stress on the joints and the connective tissues and all that. Yeah. So using stim on my quads or my glutes is very attractive at my age because it's, I know I'm getting some stress through those muscles in a way that's not, you know, creating all those negative side effects as well. So I think for an older population, it's a good way to supplement strength training in a way that doesn't create the same overuse issues that we're always concerned about.
That's a very interesting point. And it makes me think that like for a cyclist, as an example, like myself, we can get very fit in a single plane of movement, and we're completely unfit in all other planes. And so EMS might be a way. I mean, probably cross training is what the, you know, old school way of doing that, but people tend to have time constraints. And so if you're just going to be cycling a lot of the time, then maybe use EMS to activate some of the muscles that you don't use when you're riding a bike.
Yeah, it's very quad dominant. And there's a lot of stress in the low back in terms of riding position. So maybe you could do more work anteriorly on the upper body and posteriorly on the lower body. So more hamstring development and that. So yeah, you can use it to target areas that aren't targeted by cycling.
Cool.
So yeah, and say you do have a bit of knee issues and you know, you want to target your vastus medialis or some other muscle that might be taxed from doing a lot of heavy mileage or hills, then you can maybe cut your mileage down and use both, like I said, a strength program and an endurance program to supplement that those extra miles that you don't want to put on the bike.
Right. Okay. Derek, I'm going to ask you to tell us some more about how we can find more information about you. But before we do that, I wonder, is there any last bit of advice for the older athlete that you'd like to offer? Doesn't have to just be on EMS.
Well, again, and most mature athletes are pretty good at advocating for themselves. But I think if you're looking at electrical stimulation, you know, you have to, you know, maybe start with owning a device. And like I said, the Compex device it's a good company. It's Swiss based and they've been in the game a long time and it's very easy to use. So that's kind of my first stop.
Okay.
But you know, mess around with it, but also be consistent and committed to it. Like you can't just try it a couple of times and hope it works. Like, you know, put in a good, you know, 6-12 weeks of using it regularly and you'll see an improvement. And whether that's, you know, if you might choose to just do it for recovery, you might choose to use it as a strengthening device, or pain management, but it is very useful. They're very compact. The batteries last, you know, a decent amount of time. And, you know, it's probably one of the better investments that you could make, in terms of having a tool that can help your training and help your recovery. And you'll learn a bit, like, you know, like we talked about the diagnostic tool as far as looking at symmetry and all that. You learn a little bit more about yourself by using it as well. You're like, oh, okay, that's different. That, you know, putting it on that muscle, you know, was a little different. Or when I'm dehydrated, I need more current, you know. So it can detect a lot of these fluid levels too. Or it detects fatigue levels. There's a great study I quote all the time where if somebody has heat fatigue, then you'll find that you need more current. So if you need more current than normal, usually that means there's something wrong. Either you're fatigued, you're dehydrated, you're injured, maybe your brain's just not functioning properly. Or maybe, you know, I mean, I think there was somebody who was, I didn't know they were taking like opiates for pain medication. And so when I put it on them, you know, I think it had a similar receptor site or something like that. So I could put it up really high and I didn't understand it, you know, and then they said, oh, okay, I'm on this or somebody told me that they were on certain antidepressants. So now it gives you kind of this window into, well, something's wrong here. This is not normal. So it makes you ask other questions. So I think it's very interesting in that regard.
Yeah, you can learn a little bit about yourself. That's interesting. Well, cool. Well, how can people find you, Derek? You've been very helpful. I appreciate that.
The two websites that I use all the time are sprintcoach.com, which is more of like a consultation training program. So teams will contact me through sprintcoach.com to arrange consultations or work with them. And then the other one is runningmechanics.com, which is where I teach courses. So I teach in-person courses around running technique, but also rehab. And I also have online courses. So one of the online courses, we do touch on electrical stimulation. It's the level 2 course, the level 2 med course. because I use it so much as part of rehab for running injuries that we have a module in there that talks about it. But I will be creating a standalone electrical muscle stimulation course for practitioners or anybody who wants to learn more. I'm just taking a lot of time to put that together because it is so, one, it's kind of a sensitive area around rehabilitation, but I want to make sure that anything I put down is supported by research as well. And I'm not, you know, flying out of left field here and saying, yeah, put it on your head. So those are the two areas. And then on Instagram, it's just Derek M. Hansen, which I put a lot of this information on my Instagram as well, just to help educate people.
Well, perfect. Well, I'll get those links and put them in the show notes so anybody who wasn't taking notes here can find that, and then they'll be able to find you. Derek, thanks again, man. This was very helpful to me. I only regret that we didn't talk 4 months ago. Would have been good for my prep for my surgery and then immediately afterwards, but I'm going to start using this. I have my own compacts unit, and will echo what you've said. I've dropped the thing 100 times. I mean, it's like a battleship. It just and the battery lasts forever. It takes forever to charge up, but once it's charged, it lasts forever. It's a great device. So, thank you again, sir, and you have a great day.
Thank you very much for having me, Joe.
All righty, bye bye. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Derek Hansen and learned as much as I did about how to use EMS to support recovery and performance improvement. You can find out more about Derek and how to contact him in the show notes. And while you're there, you can also complete a free fitnesses practices assessment, register for our newsletter, and see all of our episodes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review and forward it to a friend. That'd be a great help. Thanks.